What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 70. Today, we're going to be talking about ways to do keto wrong. And there's a few different aspects to it, so how you can mess it up. We're going to break that down. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
It's had its highs and lows. The only lows have been coming from this whole Game Changers movie and just how much just stupid discussions are going on about it. Like, if I never have to hear anything about that for the rest of my life, I'll be fucking good. Like, yeah. I'm so sick of it.
A brief breakdown. What is the Game Changers movie?
So, Game Changers is, I would call it a vegan propaganda film about how a vegan diet is supposed to be superior to any other diet, especially for athletes. So, like, there's been a lot of debates back and forth about this film and about how credible, like, some of the claims actually are. Personally, I think most of them are bullshit. Most of the other people I've listened to kind of agree. There's been like a big debate on Joe Rogan's podcast. He had one of the producers of the film debating Chris Kresser. And there's like a big...
And we're both fans of Chris Kresser, by the way.
Yeah, I really like his approach. I consider him an expert in nutrition. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how many people I actually consider to be experts in nutrition. But he's somebody I value his opinion when it comes to it.
He knows a lot, I'll say that.
And I would think he knows quite a bit about being a vegan and like the deficiency of it, because he was a vegan and he had deficiencies. That's why he stopped being a vegan. So I think he's a pretty knowledgeable source. He has his own personal experience and he has his own background in nutrition. He has a master's degree in nutrition.
Yeah.
Maybe he isn't like the absolute authority, but he's up there.
For sure he's up there.
He knows this shit.
He does.
So he had a really big debate on Chris... Joe Rogan's podcast with James Wilkes. And yeah, it's just so frustrating. It's a 4-hour podcast. If you want to listen to it, good for you. Shit, I've been trying to break it down. I have not gotten through all of it yet. It's just too frustrating. I listened to it for about 5 to 10 minutes and I'm just in a bad mood. Like, it just kind of just completely killed me. I really wish that it was a fair debate. Like, Chris Kresser is bringing facts, just talking about studies and just what's relevant to the discussion. And Wilkes just keeps trying to smear Kresser, which is already like a low blow. Keeps calling him like not an expert and just kind of does the appeal to authority. Well, it's like, hey, you're not smart enough to interpret this study. This doctor from Harvard is smart enough and this is his interpretation. So your opinion means shit. Using that type of argument. It's like, that's not really a fair argument.
No, it's not at all. And the
experts once thought cigarettes were good.
100%. And the world was flat.
Okay? Yeah. I mean, like, there's tons of times that we can go through where experts were wrong.
100%.
And if we kept going, like, appealing to authority, yeah, we would have never traveled the world because we've been too scared to.
Yeah, fall off the edge.
Yeah. We'd still be smoking cigarettes in, in like patient rooms, delivering babies.
Yeah.
We would never wash our hands because germs aren't a thing either.
Yeah.
Like, that was another thing. Like, the guy who discovered germs, or first had the idea that germs were, like, around, died in an insane asylum.
Yeah,
chastised. And insane asylum is kind of putting it, like, gently.
Yeah, saying nice.
He died, like, in a cold jail cell.
Yeah, straitjacket.
Yeah.
It was actually a really sad story.
Oh, I know, and he was right.
Yeah, he was right. And so, yeah, we're talking about that because we heard the narrative after this debate was that the vegan guy won the debate, and I'm saying, like, won in air quotes. So that's why Tom actually checked out the debate just to see what it was all about.
Yeah, Joe Rogan commented that he was thinking about taking down Chris Kresser's like original rebuttal on his podcast. And like, I've listened through it. I'm not all the way through. Maybe like the last 30 minutes is going to completely change my opinion on it. But
it won't.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt it. Everything that Kresser says, like, maybe he wasn't 100% correct, but if he's 1% wrong, that doesn't make him 100% wrong. And Wilkes is turning that, you're 1% wrong, that means you're not trustworthy, you're not credible, and we can't trust the other 99% of what you're saying, which just isn't, which isn't fair.
That's not fair at all. And yeah, you mentioned earlier, we were talking, that he approached it not as a debate about facts, he approached it like a lawyer.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, he's, Wilkes's like mission in the debate wasn't to defend his facts. It was to make Chris Kresser appear uncredible. So by doing that, that means like his original claims from the movie are good. He's just trying to muddy the waters. It's like, hey, you don't know anything. I don't know anything. Let the movie stand. And he, one thing that I thought was a real low blow is he claimed that Kresser has financial ties to like this, or financial ties against this movie because he sells supplements in his clinic. Well, every clinic sells supplements. Like, I wouldn't say that the InShape gym that I go to, they sell supplements so that they have like a financial, what's the word I'm looking for? God, we're so dumb right now.
We're so dumb.
Listen too much to that podcast. That made me dumber.
You're just trying to say they're not trustworthy because they have some interest in gain.
Yeah. Yeah, because of their financially conflicted, they have a conflict of interest.
Fuck. Thank you.
Wow.
Jeez Louise. Hard. Thank you.
He has a conflict of interest against the vegan diet because he sells supplements in his clinic. Which, I mean, that's just not a fair thing to make, especially because he's not making money off of it.
No.
It's not, it's, if he owned a supplement company or invested $140 million into some sort of supplement company, like James Cameron has invested into a pea protein company, then you can claim a conflict of interest. Just because he's making some pennies because some of his clients are buying this stuff, that doesn't really make anything. He's not, that's not changing anything.
No, that's not his like major source of income.
Yeah, he's not making, he's making $1,000 a year off of that. Like, I don't think that really means that much to him.
Me
like,
either.
That's not a big thing for him.
No.
So I just thought it was completely unfair and just kind of hate the way this whole debate is turning out to be.
It's frustrating.
And it's like, Kresser's getting smeared when I haven't heard him say anything factually wrong, or at least, like, wrong enough where, like, make me change my opinion. Like, he's been slightly wrong because of some random obscure studies that, that Wilkes has brought up that I've never heard of, and I don't know how many people really have.
Yeah, or how even applicable those studies are to anything practical in day-to-day life.
Yeah. Alright, I already spent so much time on it, but I just want to give one, like, example of it.
Sure.
It's like, they talk about vitamin B12. And one of the claims from the movie is that people used to be able to get vitamin B12 through their water and through plants because of the dirt, and mostly through the feces that were on those plants. And since we spray everything with pesticides now, the vitamin B12 that we could have gotten from plants and water are now gone. So that's why vegans need a supplement with vitamin B12. And that we also, some of the factory farmed animals, we supplement their feed or inject them with vitamin B12. I've never heard either one of these claims. Kresser said that there's no evidence to suggest that. Apparently there's like two obscure studies that Wilkes brought up to do that. So now, because that Kresser was wrong on his claim saying there's no evidence of that, that Kresser was wrong about vitamin B12 altogether. But the facts are, vegans are 92% likely to become low in vitamin B12. Vegetarians are, is it 71%?
Yeah, it's in the 70s.
It's somewhere in the 70s. A shit ton likely to be low in vitamin B12.
Yeah.
Where omnivores are 11% likely to be.
Tiny.
Tiny, like not even close.
Your high school kid eating Cheetos at every meal.
Yeah, that's somebody following a shitty standard American diet eating chicken nuggets. They're getting vitamin B12.
Exactly.
And Wilkes' argument against that is, since everybody can become deficient in vitamin B12 or low in B12, and we're supplementing our feed with it, that everybody should be supplementing with B12. Well, what about wild game? What about fish? What about lobsters that's at the bottom of the ocean right now?
Yeah.
We're not supplementing them, and those are some of the best sources of vitamin B12. So yes, the best source of vitamin B12 is fucking animals.
Yes,
it's not
is.
A supplement.
It's not a supplement. No.
If the best source of vitamin B12 was supplements, we would have died off a long time ago, because supplements are new.
Yeah.
It was so frustrating listening to that.
No, God, it sounds frustrating. I mean, you're a bigger man than me. I couldn't listen to that podcast. I really couldn't. It would just, I'd want to shoot myself.
Oh, well, that thought definitely crossed my mind. That's why I've been breaking it up. I haven't been able to listen to it more than an hour at a time.
But the gist of it, that guy is honestly a jerk. He attacked Chris Kresser, and he didn't really beat him on any sort of factual points. He beat him from a bully standpoint. And
just muddying the waters.
Yeah, just muddying the waters. So it's almost not fair, but it is what it is.
Well, I don't know how you can claim somebody else has a conflict of interest when this guy's the producer of the movie. He spent thousands of hours on this movie.
Years of his life.
Like, I'm pretty sure this movie means a lot to him. So if you want to talk about conflicts of interest, this is your fucking life's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a major conflict of interest. If your life's work, it turns out to be bullshit.
Yeah.
Which it pretty much is.
It is.
So, I don't know. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, to put a bow on it, the Game Changers movie is crap. Everything they say in it is pretty much wrong. And if you want to be an athlete and one that is performing at a high level, going vegan is not the way to go. That's what I would say. And I would stand by that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is, like, going vegan is slightly better than a standard American diet. And that's about as far as I would go with that. There are many other diets that are far superior than a vegetarian diet.
Yeah, being shot in the knee is better than being shot in the head. Yeah. How about this? Just not get shot, you know?
All right, so that's enough about Game Changers. Hopefully we'll never talk about that again.
No, we're not. I'm so over that. Yeah.
So what's new with you this week?
You know, obviously not much. You know, my life is definitely on routine. Like, every day is the same day. But I did read a paper talking about fructose recently. And so I'm not a fan of fructose. Fructose is the fruit. It's commonly found in France. In fruit. That's why it's called fructose. That's how it got its name. And also, like, table sugar is half glucose, half fructose. So, you know, that's what gives the table sugar its sweet taste. Glucose is a sugar, and that's actually not sweet at all. Fructose is very sweet. But, yeah.
That's why we add, like, high fructose corn syrup to a lot of things to make them sweet, is because that fructose is so sweet.
Exactly. It tastes really good. Yeah. So, this study they gave, I think it was, like, 20 participants. They split it up into 10 people who were metabolically healthy and 10 people who had signs of kind of insulin resistance and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is a very telltale sign of insulin resistance. And they fed them, they just had their standard diet, and they said, eat an extra 150 grams of fructose a day and see how that goes. I believe it was for 8 weeks. And they just gave them this fructose in the form of like a baggie of white powder and said, you can mix it in with water.
By snorting that?
Yeah, you can snort it, you can shoot it, you can drink it all in the morning. You know, you can do whatever you want with it as long as you get that much extra fructose in a day. And honestly, that's a shit ton of fructose.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I personally, with my understanding, was expecting a little bit more of a response from everybody. But it looked like after 8 weeks, the healthy individuals maintained their health. They had no signs of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. They didn't gain any, like, body fat. And they didn't show any signs of metabolic derangement. But the people who were, like, went into that study with issues going on, they showed they got worse. And that makes perfect sense. And I think that just goes back to the fact that, I mean, just be honest with yourself. Look in the mirror. If you're lean, young, healthy, you work out every day, can you handle some fruit? Can you handle some sugar? Sure. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to kill you. But if you're out there and you're already kind of chubby, and guess what? Most people are kind of chubby.
Mm-hmm.
On the best of days.
Yeah, and most of that chubbiness is, I would assume, probably caused by the fructose. So they've already had a lot of damage caused by the fructose.
Over years.
Yeah, and the healthy individuals probably don't have as much damage done to them, or they process fructose better.
Exactly.
One or the other.
One or the other.
That's what my interpretation would be.
That's exactly what I was thinking as well. It's not a some people, I just looking through the comments of the post, were talking about, oh, look, fructose isn't that bad. You know, like, these people did fine. And I was like, no, what it shows is that these healthy individuals are capable of metabolizing it better, but look at what it did to these fat people. Yeah. It made these fat people sicker and fatter.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't really argue that fructose is beneficial, but it just seems like some people can deal with it better than others.
For sure, yeah. But, I mean, like I said, look around, man. Most of this country is not metabolically healthy.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
Therefore, most people should not ingest extra fructose just because.
Yeah. And even, well, I mean, like, the fatty liver disease is a pretty good marker of it. Like, yeah. You wouldn't be able to be, what is it, tofu? Thin on the outside, fat on the inside.
Yeah, uh-huh.
I mean, because there are plenty of people like that. That are, you know, they look healthy, they're thin, but then you don't really know what's going on the inside.
Yep.
They could have fatty liver disease, heart disease, something else. There's plenty of people like that.
Exactly. Yeah, they actually measured, I forget it's ectopic fat, like, disposition, or like ectopic fat, deposition, maybe. So it's, okay. Just, it's like fat in the muscle, which is not healthy. Like, but that's what your body does when it kind of spills over. It places fat everywhere. So it'll place fat in your liver, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, but it also place fat in your muscles. And the people who were already fat got more fat in their muscles. And that just makes them more and more insulin resistant, more and more obese, more and more sick. So it's bad all around.
So it's just more evidence that, hey, fructose, not good for us, especially that high fructose corn syrup shit.
Exactly.
It's like, what's the, and like fruit, isn't it like 45% fructose, somewhere around there? I mean, I know it varies.
I'm not sure. I know it varies. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I know like high fructose corn syrup is like 55 to like 60% like fructose.
To glucose, yeah.
Yeah. So like there's a, I mean, that's not a big difference, but I mean, high fructose corn syrup will make you fat in an instant. Like the fruit probably take a little bit longer to make you fat.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it will though, man. Give it time. But yeah, so that's all new with me. So this week we're talking about ways to do keto wrong. And we touch on topics like artificial sweeteners. I think a lot of people rely on that. We touch on topics like nut butters and just what's wrong with consuming that every day. So if you're interested to learn about all the ways people mess up keto and how you should do it right, just continue to listen to the podcast and hopefully everyone learns something. TNT, wellnessandnutrition.com, whole food nutrition rediscovered. If you are struggling looking to improve your health or optimize your lifestyle, you can sign up for a custom meal plan on our website, TNTwellnessandnutrition.com. Back to today's topic. All right, so let's get into the discussion on ways to do keto wrong, because there are definitely ways to do it wrong. So the first one we want to talk about is artificial sweeteners, and that's something you're going to see, like aspartame is a big one. I think sucralose is another one, stevia.
There's tons. There's even the keto like friendly ones, like quote unquote, like the monk fruit extract, the xylitol and erythritol, which are like sugar
alcohols.
Yeah, like, I mean, pretty much anything that just tastes sweet, like, that might have a, it might still be zero calorie, or it's like 0.4 calories. Like, yeah, like pretty much anything in that category is what we're talking about.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of food out there marketed as keto that has a lot of artificial sweeteners in it. And I just don't think people should be eating those foods that much, relying on them. There's multiple reasons for that. One is just the, I think the avoidance, everyone out there, whether you know it or not, you're eating the standard American diet, is probably addicted to sugar, right? Whether it's your personality, I love bread, guess what? You love sugar. Or the person out there is really like Dwight Howard, 12 candy bars a day, you love sugar. You know what I'm saying? How do you break that habit? You literally stop eating sugar. Moderation does not work. You have to cut that shit off. And these sweet tasting foods are not going to help you break that sugar addiction.
Yeah, I mean, like the way I look at it is, if you were to quit drinking alcohol, you wouldn't recommend somebody to switch to O'Doul's, like that
Bud Light.
Well, it's like 1% beer. So like it tastes like beer, but you're not getting any of the alcohol. That's not what I would tell somebody to quit drinking. I would just tell them, hey, just avoid that shit and avoid places that are going to make you think of drinking. Mm-hmm. Like you wouldn't tell them to still drink the alcohol, but don't get the alcohol from it. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You're still going to be craving beer if you're drinking beer all the time.
Yeah, and it's really hard out there just to live your normal life and avoid sugar. You know what I mean? Like, hey, donuts taste good, candy bars taste good. So just do yourself a favor and cut out artificial sweeteners. It'll make sticking to the keto diet a million times easier. And also, the whole, I guess, one of the benefits of the keto diet is the low insulin. So our body produces a hormone, our pancreas specifically, called insulin, and insulin shuttles nutrients into our cells. And glucose is the big one. So when we're not eating a bunch of glucose, the need, obviously, to push all this extra glucose into our cells decreases. So insulin goes down, and that lets our body break down fat. But when you eat these artificial sweeteners, even though they technically have no sugar in them, they can raise insulin, very similar to a carbohydrate-based drink. And that's a problem, right? The whole point is to lower insulin.
Yeah, exactly. So what's really misleading is all these artificial sweeteners, a lot of them say that they have no glycemic index, or like, you know, they'll say that they don't raise blood sugar. But that's such an individual thing, because like just looking at something sweet, like your body might start producing insulin. It really depends on the person and like the circumstance. It's called the cephalic cephalic response?
I think so.
It's something along those lines. I know it's cephalic.
Something saliva. Yeah.
Yeah, so your mouth starts watering. Like, you don't need to be eating for your mouth to water.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, your body will start producing the hormones, the enzymes.
In preparation for the food it thinks it's going to get.
Yeah, exactly. So it hits you a couple ways. It increases your cravings for sweet things, and then also your body's still going to respond to it the same way. And if we're talking about stuff like aspartame especially, that stuff destroys your gut microbiome. Like, I don't know about the rest of them, but I know, like, that's one of the worst things for your gut microbiome.
Yeah, and I think a lot of big claims are made about the gut microbiome, and I'm not on board with a lot of it, but there's no doubt about it. We want a healthy gut. Like, yes, having definitely. A healthy gut is extremely important, and honestly, it's the backbone to any, I think, really proper diet. You got to get your head healthy.
Oh, for sure, because we talked about, I don't know if we talked about this last podcast or not, but, like, where our body produces butyrate to turn into beta-hydroxybutyrate.
Yeah,
in our gut. Yeah, it's in our gut. So if you don't have the right microbiome in your gut to make that, then you're not really going to get into full ketosis and get all the benefits of it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a whole other aspect, too. I didn't even think of that, the artificial sweeteners destroy your gut. And a bad gut is going to affect you in so many ways, not just from a physique standpoint, which it can. You know what I mean? It can make you fat. It can make you sick. But mentally. You know, we have that vagus nerve that goes from our GI tract. It's literally straight to our brain. Like, it can cause you, make you depressed. It can make you anxious. It can make you, I don't want to say schizophrenic, but it can put you in a mentally disturbed state when your gut is inflamed and your gut is not healthy.
Oh, for sure.
And studies are out there showing that.
Yeah, I know Chris Kresser does a lot of, he shows a lot of studies that support that, talking mm-hmm. about the relationship between gut microbiome and mental health. Like, there's a lot of disorders. I think schizophrenia is one of them. Depression is, I know.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, that are just, the gut microbiome is so messed up in these patients.
Yep.
So another aspect of, like, the whole artificial sweeteners is, like, what benefit do they actually provide? So best case scenario, the artificial sweeteners just pass through your body and are neutral. That's best case scenario, is they're neutral. They're not beneficial.
You mean besides giving you a sweet flavor?
Yeah. What I mean, is that beneficial?
It's so, to someone who really wants something sweet,
for those 3 seconds?
Yeah. That's true.
I'm not really going to call 3 seconds of something a benefit, but okay.
Okay.
So, like, yeah, there's the neutral at best. At worst, raising your insulin, basically having all the same side effects of sugar.
Yep.
So, at worst, it's sugar. At best, it's neutral. I think it's pretty much just better just to avoid it as much as you possibly can.
Just cut it out. Yeah. Exactly.
If you need these artificial sweeteners because you're just starting the keto diet and that's the only way you can do it, sure, that's perfectly fine. But you shouldn't be relying on these 6 months into your journey, 3 years into your journey. You should be cutting those back as often as you possibly can.
Yeah, that's very true. And I know I've met people, and I've talked to you about it as well, who are on the keto diet, and I say keto in quotes, but they drink like 5 Diet Cokes a day. And, like, man, you are hindering your growth, you are hindering your progress so much, and you don't even know it. But it fits the keto macros.
Potentially, I don't know. Like, that could raise your insulin so much that you're not producing ketones. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
that's going to be an individual.
But the nutritional facts on the back of the can say it's fine.
Oh, it definitely fits your macros.
It fits your macros.
Yeah.
Yeah. But from a hormonal standpoint, it does not fit the keto diet at all.
Yeah.
So the next one I think people should cut out, and this one's going to be controversial because people love this shit. They love it. It's going to be nut butters. So think, obviously, peanut butter, almond butter, cashew butter. I'm sure there's other ones out there.
I think those are, like, the big ones.
That's the big three?
Yeah.
So I hate nut butters from a nutritional standpoint. Now, do they taste great? They sure do. When I first went low carb, when I first went keto, did I buy almond butter and peanut butter? Even the all natural, just whole nuts, all that stuff? Yeah, I did. And I ate that shit all the time. But the more I educated myself, the more I realized these things are trash in every aspect. So there's really 3 major things about them that suck. One, if you look on the back, a lot of people think, like, nut butter is a good source of protein.
Yeah, there's a lot of nitrogen in there.
That's exactly. Yeah, he finished my sentence pretty much. Yeah, the protein in these nut butters is a very low quality. It's not bioavailable, and it's lacking a lot of amino acids. Like, methionine's one, and there's a bunch of other ones as well. So from the way our body metabolizes protein, it does not metabolize nut butter proteins very well. And this goes for nuts in general as well. All these things are going to be bad things for nuts in general as well. But The protein is trash. The nuts themselves are full of these things called anti-nutrients. And these are just proteins inside these nuts that are kind of their own innate defense system. Things like phytase, things like oxalates, things like lectins. And they help the seed protect itself, right? Because if the seed is just a baby plant, it has to have something to protect itself. But what that does to us internally, it destroys us. It destroys our gut, which we just talked about is so important. And it can hinder our absorption of vitamins and minerals. Something like oxalate really binds to calcium. It's one of the main drivers of kidney stones, because kidney stones are really just calcium oxalate-like deposits. And it can also bind to magnesium. We have a whole podcast on magnesium. It's actually a two-part one. So magnesium is extremely important. What do you say?
Definitely. And it's so deficient in many people's diets that it's even more important like now.
Exactly. So eating something that actually will rob us of magnesium is a crazy, like, negative thing. It's super bad. And the big thing I think makes these even worse is the primary fat inside these nut butters is polyunsaturated omega-6 fats. And those things are straight poison.
Yeah, even if we just want to include, like, just normal nuts in the nut butter discussion, stuff like almonds and pecans, which do have a lot of omega-3s, those have the wrong type of omega-3s in them. So even, like, the ones that are more omega-3 friendly, once you consider that they're all ALA and that our body doesn't transfer ALA into DHA or EPA, the actual omega-3s that our body uses,
yeah,
it only transfers them to, like, a 5 to, like, 10% clip. Yeah. There's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah. It can be as low as 0%. I've seen things as 0 to 10%.
Yeah, I don't know why, like, most of the studies say 5. It should really be 0.
Yeah.
So, like, you're not getting anywhere near that. So, no matter what, it's going to be a pro-inflammatory food.
Yeah. I also want to break that out a little bit, just to make it a little more,
Digestible,
yeah. So, the vast majority of people will hear the term omega-3, and they'll think it is a good thing. It's a healthy fat. You'll see it on whatever, a side of a pill bottle. It'll be next to like a little nice little red heart. It'll say heart healthy omega-3s.
Yeah, so your fish oils, the flaxseed oils for the vegans out there.
All that stuff, right? And they're not wrong. Omega-3s are especially healthy. And I don't want to paint omega-6s as non-healthy because they're just as healthy. It's a ratio thing. But omega-3s are great for you. There's no doubt about it. But there are different forms of omega-3. And this is where the narrative out there with nut butters and things that are marketed as heart healthy kind of gets a little muddy. It's full of half-truths, and that's something I've been saying a lot lately. So is it true that something, what were those nuts you just said?
Pecans and walnuts are the two main ones.
So is it true that pecans and walnuts are higher in omega-3 fats? Yes, it is true. Do they have a better omega-3 to omega-6 ratio? Yes, they do. Okay, and are those good things? Sure. All right, I'm not going to say they're not, but does it really matter to us? If our body absorbs these omega-3s in these nuts in the form of ALA, and trust me, we're using the abbreviated terms because the names are super long and it would make it honestly less understandable.
Well, the last name is acid. That one's easy.
Yeah, so in ALA, which is a form of omega-3 in these nuts, our body simply doesn't absorb it. Even if you're the best, like you're the healthiest person out there and you absorb omega-3 from these nuts like a champ, you're only going to get about 10%. So, honestly, you shouldn't even count this source as a good thing, you know?
No, definitely. And it's definitely not making that omega-6 to omega-3 ratio. It's not improving it.
It's not making it any better.
Yeah. Like, you still need to eat probably even more sardines or salmon or something like that to make up for that.
To balance that out, yeah. So, just to break that up. So, the omega-3s we actually care about are DHA and EPA. And those are going to come from animal source food. Something like Tom just said, sardines, honestly, any animal source is going to have it in it, but sardines and things, usually aquatic animals like fish, salmon, they're going to be very high in omega-3s that are actually bioavailable, and that's really the key term. And something I say a lot is you aren't what you eat, you are what you absorb. And if you absorb these actual omega-3s, you're going to get all the benefits. But if you eat all these omega-3s that you can't even absorb, you're not going to get the benefits. So what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that is really misleading when it comes to stuff like that, when it comes to nuts and seeds.
But the omega fat that you are going to absorb perfectly fine is the other reason why these nuts and seeds and nut butters are horrible for you. And it's the omega-6 fat linoleic acid. And these, you know, I don't know the ratios off the top of my head, but it's something, it's like 20 to 1, 15 to 1 for these nut butters. Like Omega 6, Omega 3?
I mean, well, it's going to depend on which nut you're talking about.
Yeah, but it's horrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good. Yeah, I forget the ratios, but they are very heavily dominant towards the Omega 6 side. And Omega 6, especially Omega 6 acid, called linoleic acid, that's a primary one out there. Or at least that's going to be the dominant one you're going to get from your diet. It's honestly linked to every modern disease out there. So I'm talking heart disease, cancer, dementia, diabetes, everything. And the problem with it is it's so unstable. And honestly, our body never in history, you know, we've been humans technically for a couple million years now. We never had a huge source of omega fats in our diet ever. So when I get, say 10 to 20 grams of fat in this like spoonful of peanut butter, most of that fat is linoleic acid. Our body doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, and not only are you getting like an absurd amount in one time, most likely you're doing, I don't know, a shake with like almond butter in it every single day, twice a day, something like that. So you're not only getting an absurd amount in one serving, you're getting that absurd amount all the damn time.
Yep.
So like that ratio is just getting all out of whack, like not even close.
All out of whack, yeah. And so these fats, these polyunsaturated fats with the omega-6 is, they oxidize very easily. And you can think of oxidation as just something like going rancid, something going bad. So when you eat a bunch of these oxidated fats, you're going to oxidize internally as well. Our cells are made up primarily of the fat we eat. So if you eat a bunch of omega-6 fat, guess what? Your cells are going to be made of primarily omega-6 fats, and it's not a good thing. They oxidize very easily, and that leads to, again, all those diseases. And we have a whole podcast on omega-6 fats. I think it's called The Dangers of Industrial Seed Oils, I think, or...
It's industrial seed oils.
It's just industrial seed oils.
Something along those lines, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's episode like 39 or something like that. So you can go back and listen to that and check it out. It goes through in detail how it's linked to cancer, how it's linked to diabetes, heart disease, and the links are strong as shit. You know, like it's not like very, well, it's up for interpretation. Like it's pretty clear that these fats are not good for us.
No, not at all.
So even though they fit the keto macros, even though you can eat the whole damn tub of peanut butter and still technically fit your keto macros, it's not healthy and you shouldn't do it.
And yes, we both know that peanuts and cashews aren't technically nuts. They're legumes. But hey, everybody else considers them nuts. Like peanut, it ends in nuts. We're just considering them nuts. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I didn't even think
I mean, they're wrong. They're bad for you for the same reasons.
Exactly. Yeah,
so same we don't really thing. Need to get in the debate between seeds and nuts and... legumes.
Yeah, the difference between those. Yeah, that's true.
So the other one that's bad for most of the same reasons is vegetable oils or industrial seed oils. We use both names interchangeably.
Yeah.
Those are really bad for you for the same exact reason.
What are like the primary vegetable oils out there?
Canola is like the go-to one that I think of. Olive oil you can kind of consider in the same realm because most American olive oil is going to be
cut with canola oil.
Like it's just under 50%. Like it has to be mostly olive oil for them to have olive oil on the label. So it's going to be like 51% olive oil, 49% canola oil.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that, and that sucks.
I know, and honestly, I don't consume olive oil mostly because of that reason. Yeah. There's other reasons too, but like that's the big one.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's not olive oil.
Because you just have to know, you have to really trust your provider, your source.
Yeah.
And how many people are really doing the research in the company providing them olive oil?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
No one is.
Yeah. So, yeah, like another one would be peanut oil. It's in the same category. That's like one of the quote-unquote healthy oils that like restaurants cook with.
Corn oil.
Corn oil is a big one.
Soy is a huge one as
soy,
well.
Soy, yeah.
And soy is the worst of them all, trust me.
Yeah, that's the one that's in like almost all the processed foods.
Yep.
So, like, those are some of the big ones. I don't know. There's tons of others. Safflower, sunflower.
Yeah, I think, all the negatives I said of the nuts. So, the protein's trash. They're full of anti-nutrients. And they're full of these omega-6 fats. At least the nuts have some vitamins and minerals. At least they have some amino acids. Even though they suck.
There are some benefits. Like, if you make a pro and con list, there's going to be a few in the pro. There's going to be a lot more in the cons, yes. But there's at least a few in the pro.
Yes, there are none in the pro when it comes to vegetable oils. It is literally a 100% negative thing. And even you'll hear canola oil being claimed as like a heart-healthy oil because as far as all the vegetable oils go, canola will have the most omega-3s. But guess what form the omega-3s in?
I'm guessing it'll be AOA.
100%. So the form that you're getting in the canola oil, your body doesn't absorb and your body doesn't convert to the actual usable forms of omega-3. So what's the point? If they're all trash and they're all poison. And that's not an understatement. Calling them poison is accurate.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have an entire podcast just talking about how poisonous they are. But the smoke that you get from cooking these vegetable oils is equivalent of cigarette smoke.
Yes.
So I'm pretty sure everybody out there will agree that cigarette smoke is poison. So cooking with these oils is just as poisonous.
Just as poisonous. And there are studies out there doing it. You can check the website. Again, we always cite everything. So just go to the industrial seed oil. There's a study linking the smoke from vegetable oil to high lung cancer rates in women in China. So it's out there for sure. And that's because these, like I said, these oxidized, or these omega-6 fats, they oxidize very easily. And they produce these oxidized free radical like byproducts, and they're all poisonous. And the primary one, or one of them, there's hundreds of them, but is acrolein. And acrolein is a biocide, meaning it's toxic to all life. And so like you put it on a worm outside, it kills the worm. You put it on, or some cell in your dog, it'll kill your dog. You put us in us and it'll kill parts of us. Like it's dangerous to everything, all life. That's yeah. Some toxic shit.
And at least people smoke cigarettes like most of the time outside, like in a well-ventilated area.
Yeah.
Think about where you're cooking. It's your kitchen.
Yes.
Unless you live in a big-ass house, most of the time your kitchen's pretty well in, like, enclosed. So like that smoke is basically just sitting there waiting for you to inhale it.
And not just you. Think of your kids, even your pets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything.
Oh, anytime I'm cooking, my dogs are just right underneath the stove waiting for me to drop something. They're right in the kitchen with me.
So cut those out of your diet. The vegetable oils will work for like keto macros. Again, they're obviously all fat. It's just the fat themselves are trash. So if you're going to do it, just don't do it with vegetable oils.
Yeah, and eating vegetable oils is probably better for your health than like breathing them in. Because at least like when you eat something, your body has the choice of either absorb it or not absorb it. And your liver is going to do some sort of detoxifying. When you breathe stuff in,
it bypasses it.
There's nothing separating your lungs and your blood.
Yep.
Like it's just a straight gateway to your bloodstream. So breathing in toxins is the absolute worst way to have toxins in your exposure, or just being exposed to toxins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't know where I was going with that
sentence. No, I don't know either. But but you can think of it like shooting it, like an IV.
Yeah.
Like an IV bypasses these barriers. It bypasses your gut, and it bypasses your liver, and it hits straight to your bloodstream. So it's really no different breathing stuff in.
Yeah, I know.
That's bad. But that does go into our next one, which is just consuming highly processed food that is marketed as keto.
Yeah, so this, I mean, honestly, we just talked about how bad vegetable oils are. Those are going to be in almost every single processed food. We demonize coconut oil and palm oil really bad in, like, I think it was the 70s and 80s. So those can't be used in most American products anymore.
And you can blame the soy industry for that, by the way.
And what oil replaced those?
Soy.
Yeah. I mean, so it worked for them.
I know, man. At the end of the day, it's all about money, and it's sad. If you want to learn more about that, there's a book called The Whole Soy Story, which is great, and also a Nina Teicholz book, Big Fat Surprise, touches on it too.
Yeah, she has a whole chapter on it about how the soybean oil basically demonized the palm oil and coconut oil through a bunch of like racist ads, pretty much.
And it worked.
Yep.
And guess what's healthy as shit? Palm oil and coconut oil.
Yeah. I mean, I get palm oil, there's a lot of environmental aspects to it.
Yes.
Coconut oil, I mean, I use it all the time.
Yeah, coconut's fine. Yeah.
All right. And then another thing with like the highly processed foods marketed as keto. Keto is very popular right now. So everybody's throwing keto on their label if they can. A lot of that stuff is going to have like 30 grams of sugar. So unless you're working out for 2 hours a day, just like one of those bars or something like that is going to be too much sugar for you to stay in ketosis. So they're not keto.
Yeah. And I think that's, I don't know. I think maybe people just have too much faith in the government or too much faith in like laws. Like they think if something has it on the label, like there has to be some test, there has to be some regulation.
Yeah.
Like, no. Like when you see an egg, like a carton of eggs, and it says like hormone free, cage free, like no one's regulating this shit. You know what I mean?
Not at all.
Yeah, they can say whatever they want.
Yeah, and even the people regulating it don't always have our best interests at heart either. You can just tell by like some of the, like our sodas have so much more ingredients than like a Pepsi here has like so many more ingredients, and most of them are going to be harmful compared to like a Pepsi in Europe.
That's because
they actually have regulations that like limit the amount of toxins that we could put in stuff. So yeah, there's honestly just wouldn't trust most processed food out there.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. Yeah, if it comes right up in plastic and the shelf life is like 5 years, I would recommend not eating it straight up. I don't care if it says keto on it 100 times, it's not worth it. So yeah, anything marketed as keto, I would definitely check the macros, because like Tom said, they can definitely lie to you. Something like if a little bar has like 15 grams of sugar in it, it's not keto. Like, I don't care what it says.
Yeah, I mean, you basically would have to have zero carbs for the rest of your day.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're carnivore, and not everybody is, like, that's really hard to do.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
I mean, exactly. You have a cup of coffee, which most people consider to have 0 grams of carbs. Like, there's, I don't know, about 4 to 8 grams of carbs.
There's a couple.
Yeah, there's a little bit, not a lot. But, like, if you have 1 or 2 cups of coffee in this bar, now that's, you know, your limit for the day.
That's your carb allotment, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, no side of broccoli. You can't even have one piece. That'll kick you out for the rest of the day.
That's true, yeah.
So like the next one we want to talk about would be like exogenous ketones. And technically you can drink or take the, what are they, esters, the salt esters?
I don't know.
The ketone esters. You can either get drinks or they come in, the like salt form for exogenous ketones.
Oh, like the powders?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. They're salt of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can consume either one of these.
They're not salty though. Salt is just a term. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So technically consuming these exogenous ketones will put you in ketosis.
And I want to stop you there, because he said this to me, I don't know, I guess like 30 minutes ago. And my initial response to that was no. I was like, that's not true, because I know people who have told me, specifically the story at work. There's this lady, and I got to stop saying shit like this because people listen to this. I got to start. Just,
well, you're not using names.
Yeah, I got to start speaking. It's like speaking in broad terms, but I guess she's a proponent of the keto diet. I guess she likes it, you know? But every once in a while, she cheats and whatever, goes off it. So she said, and I'm getting this secondhand from somebody, because everyone talks to me about their diet.
Yeah.
So she said that she told her that she cheated, like, on Monday. She had a bunch of, like, whatever, pizza, ice cream. But Tuesday morning, she had a bunch of exogenous ketones, and now she's back in keto. That was what she said. Like, that's all it took, right? And I was like, no, that's not true. Like, exogenous ketones won't put you in ketosis. But Tom's point is correct. It will technically put you in ketosis.
So, like, we want... I mean, I guess to clarify, there's, like, just testing positive for ketones and then, like, nutritional ketosis.
Yes.
So, I guess, like, consuming exogenous ketones, I wouldn't consider you being in nutritional ketosis. I think nutritional ketosis means your body is producing enough ketones for you to test positive for it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, I guess that's the best way to explain it.
Yeah, that's a good way to separate it. But he's not wrong, because the base measurement for ketosis is going to be, are you producing ketones? Like, would you pee out ketones after a bunch of exogenous ketones? Like, yeah. You would, 100%.
Yeah, you'd be breathing them out. They'd be in your blood.
Yeah, but are you getting the benefits of nutritional ketosis?
Yeah.
No, you're not.
And that's what most people want. So, like, the exogenous ketones, it'll give you some extra energy, and usually they'll give you some form of brain clarity. That's why most people consume them, is for, like, the benefits of, like, the better brain health. You can think clearer. Hey, you have a big project, let me just drink this.
Or, and that usually be, like, on the side of the label as, like, a benefit of them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
But, like, you're not getting increased fat oxidation. You're not getting lower insulin from that. I really don't know how that would affect your insulin at all.
I don't know either.
Probably not. Wouldn't have that much of an impact on it.
I'm not sure. I know fat doesn't affect insulin much, period.
Yeah. I mean, the exogenous ketone things, they're so new that there's not a lot of testing out there. So kind of like a lot of this is just guesswork.
Yeah.
But you're definitely not going to be burning extra fat. You're not going to be burning body fat. And that's why most people turn to keto. It's from to lose body fat.
It is, yeah. And when you're taking in these exogenous ketones, the primary one is going to be beta-hydroxybutyrate. We talked about that last week. That's a primary ketone body. But you're going to get the benefits of that for, what, 30 minutes, an hour?
Until your body runs through them.
Right? And it depends, obviously, how much you ingest. But when you actually do nutritional ketosis and you live this lifestyle every day, you're going to get access to these bodies, these ketone bodies, 24/7, 365. So that mental clarity they're talking about, you're going to get that naturally throughout the day, every day. That's what people really want. They don't want this shit like in sport, like little bursts. They should want it every day.
Yeah, like your norm is going to be the way that these people feel for like 10 minutes of like their prime, like their peak out of their day.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's going to be your new norm.
Yeah. And that's something I say a lot, and I know it comes off super cocky, and I guess I really don't give a shit, but I always say I can keep a pace other people can't keep. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because I genuinely feel that way. I feel like from a nutritional standpoint, from a physical standpoint, the way I eat really dictates how I feel. I eat amazing, and I feel amazing. And everyone else should, I think, strive for that.
Yeah, and, like, one of the things you just talked about, like, how, like, you can keep up a ridiculous pace. You don't need to stop and eat.
No.
And then you don't have to worry about slowing down after you eat either. So, like, not only are you not taking breaks, but then you don't have to worry about that, like, fog that you get after a meal. So, like, yeah, you can run through, you just run circles around other people.
Yeah, exactly. Especially the carb burners out there who need their, like, 6 small meals a day. Yeah. Like, good luck trying to keep up. It's not going to happen.
So there is, like, one benefit of exogenous ketones. Well, I guess 2. And both of them mostly going to kind of come with, like, athletics. So one I talked about briefly last week, which is if you do need, like, a ton of extra energy, like you're about to run, like, a 5K or something, like, short-term like that, having these, like, exogenous ketones could be beneficial because you could have really high blood sugar and high ketone levels, which is very unnatural. But if you're going to, like, burn through everything really fast, it could be beneficial for athletic, like, performance benefit. And then the other time is when you have, like, some sort of traumatic brain injury. So most of the time when I'm thinking, like, a concussion, I'm thinking, like, from sports. So if you are some sort of athlete that is, that needs to worry about it, like, you're playing football, wrestling, I mean, I guess anything you can get a brain injury from.
For sure.
Soccer.
Soccer, even having a ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything like that, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have ketones around, just because a lot of the science around ketosis, a lot of the benefits are showing with brain health. That's where the biggest area of study is. That's where we have, like, most of the studies going back, like, hundreds or 100 years have to do with epilepsy, brain health. So, yeah, ketones are great for your brain. So if you do have some sort of traumatic brain injury, like a concussion, drinking some sort of exogenous ketones so your brain has a clean fuel source to run off of is a good idea.
Yeah, I agree with that for sure. And it's also a good idea just to do keto right and do it right every day.
Yeah. The only reason, like, those exogenous ketones would be beneficial then is, like, if you are in some sort of athletic event, your blood sugars are probably, like, super high at the moment because you're burning through a lot of blood sugar. So your body might not be producing a lot of ketones at that time.
Yeah.
So it's just a way so you can get it. But, yeah, you should still be following a ketogenic diet after the brain injury.
For sure. So the next one, I think people do keto wrong, are if you're in the keto world, you know what a fat bomb is, and that's just honestly a real high fat, low carb dessert. So again, it fits the keto macros, you know, it'll be 30 grams of fat and 5 grams of sugar, but is it really helping you?
I mean, most likely you're consuming, like, artificial sweeteners, maybe some nut butters, maybe some sort of vegetable oil with it. So I mean, after you make all that, it's a really highly processed food. So it's pretty much, like, the worst of everything that we just talked about.
Exactly. And I think even if you do, like, your homemade fat bomb, I mean, I've never made one, so I really don't even know what goes into them. Let's just say it's the most wholesome shit you can do. You know, there's no nuts in it. There's no vegetable oils in it. It's just a whole bunch of healthy fats and very little carbohydrates. Cool. Okay. From a nutritional standpoint, is that a problem? No. You know, do your thing. Go ahead. But the reason, or at least one of the primary reasons people go keto, is fat loss. Well, guess what's going to happen when you eat all this fat from the diet? It displaces actual fat burning from your own body. So yeah, you're still burning fat, you're still producing ketones, but the fat you're burning, you just ate. You're not actually burning body fat. And most people, I don't know about you, but everyone wants to get lean, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So I mean, maybe consuming an extra 100 grams of fat a day might not be the smartest.
Yeah, 100 grams of dietary fat means that you're at least going to burn 100 less grams of your own body fat. So you might not be, like, storing a bunch of fat. Maybe fat bombs won't make you fat, but you're definitely going to lose fat slower.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to put it. Like, I don't know if you'd really be gaining a lot of weight, depending, unless you have...
You could.
Yeah, if you put a lot of artificial sweeteners in them, and, you know, like, they're highly inflammatory because they have a lot of, like, nut butters or vegetable oils on it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I don't know when, I'm sure we talked about it before. We have counting calories and how, like, lowering your calories as a diet is really not a smart idea, especially when you're following the standard American diet that's kind of carb-heavy, because your metabolism will slowly reduce itself to match your calorie intake, even if it's low as shit, like, you know, 1,500 calories a day. So if you start a keto diet and you just came off a low-calorie diet, let's say your BMR, so your basal metabolic rate, is 1,500, okay, which is trash. That's not good.
That's really low, that's unless really you're a low child.
Okay. And let's say the keto diet is great. You know, it'll slowly restore your BMR and it'll make you lose weight, all that type of stuff. But you eat an extra 3,000 calories a day just from these extra fats, you're not going to lose that much weight. You know what I'm saying? Your metabolism is not going to be able to handle all those extra calories. It's just not.
like, hey, if you're, like I said earlier, like, if this is what's going to help you stick to the keto diet, like, you're brand new to it, sure, those are good to have, you know, especially in the beginning. Like, hey, maybe you're having a hard time getting rid of cookies, so this is your way to replace them.
Yeah.
Yes, fat bombs are much better than cookies.
Yes.
But, like, this shouldn't be, like, a crutch. This shouldn't be something that you're going to rely on day after day, especially after you've been following this way of eating for, like, 6 months or a year. Like, you should kind of get away from this type of stuff.
You should. And kind of fat coffee, butter coffee, is kind of in this same boat.
Yeah, because it's just, like, you're consuming extra fat just for the sake of consuming extra fat. Yes, a ketogenic diet is a high-fat diet, but you don't need to make it higher fat just for the sake of higher fat.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're better off just, you know, consuming, let's say, 100 grams of fat a day as opposed to 200 grams of fat, like, you know, like, that's a big difference.
It is a big difference.
You don't really need to consume extra fat just for the sake of it.
Just because. And I think that's a common misconception that people think, oh, if I'm not eating all the fat, I'm not going to be in keto. But that's not how it works.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people talk about just the ratios that 80% fat, 15% protein, 5% carbs, somewhere around there. So they think, like, you have to get to that 80% fat, 80% mark. But if you feel great at 60% fat or 70% fat, why should you go up to 80 just for the sake of it?
Yeah, just to hit some arbitrary number.
Yeah, like, you know, you shouldn't really be chasing your macros. And that's what I feel like a lot of people do.
Yes. No, I'm glad you mentioned that. So the ratio. So the next thing I think people do, which makes them do keto wrong, is they limit their protein intake. So like Tom said, a very common keto macro is, or I guess macro breakdown, is 80% fat, 15% protein, and 5% carbohydrates. And those carbohydrates are mainly going to come from something like heavy whipping cream or vegetables, usually, right? Or even like nuts.
Some like spinach or some broccoli.
Yeah, squash. There's going to be some carbs.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah, so, and you'll see the huge number there is 80% fat. And that's fine, you know, that's not unhealthy. Like, go do your thing. But I think people fear protein. And they see that 15%, they think that's like an upper limit. Like, okay, that's all the protein I can have. And there's a common narrative out there that excess protein is bad on a keto diet, that it hinders keto, that all this extra protein just turns into sugar, and there's really no difference between a high protein diet and like eating cake. Like, it's the same thing. That's what people think. But that's not true. That's not true at all. And we have a whole podcast on gluconeogenesis, which is how our body creates sugar on its own. So you can go back and listen to that if you want actually real details on how that happens. But our body, there's something called the insulin index. So Tom mentioned earlier the glycemic index, and that's really a marker. It's like a proxy for the insulin index. So usually our body, we eat sugar, say something, what's 100? Sugar is 100 on the glycemic index, right?
I think so. Like white bread is what they use as like the standard.
Okay. So white bread.
Very equivalent.
Yeah, it's just sugar. Yeah. Okay. So sugar, white bread, that's 100. And they say it's 100 because it raises insulin, or raises blood sugar. And in response, our body raises insulin to bring that blood sugar back down to normal levels, right? That's how our body works. But that doesn't paint the whole picture. The glycemic index can be hijacked, and it can be misrepresented. Something like fructose, which is a sugar, has a very low glycemic index, but it's also super unhealthy for you. But, and that's the sugar you'll find in like fruits and stuff like that. But the other index is something called the insulin index, and that's a measure of what your body's insulin response is to food. And that's actually a way better marker than the glycemic index for your intake of food. So looking at the insulin index is smart, but the insulin index can be misleading. So you'll see online, if you look into this shit like I do, something like a whey protein shake has a very high insulin index, or something like a chicken breast, or honestly really almost any meat has a high insulin index, because it does produce insulin. It causes our body to produce insulin, which is not a bad thing. Our body needs insulin to kind of shuttle these nutrients, these amino acids, these fatty acids into our cells. But it only paints, so if you're looking at it from just that narrow perspective, raising insulin is not a good thing. So people would think, okay, protein raises insulin, let's limit the protein, and so we limit the insulin. And that's just, it's not true. It's not painting the whole picture. What protein also does is it raises glucagon. So glucagon and insulin are like yin and yang. Insulin brings sugar down, glucagon brings sugar up. So what really the problem with carbohydrates is it only raises your insulin. So the insulin to glucagon ratio becomes out of whack. You have way too much insulin and way too little glucagon. with protein, about half the amino acids in a steak will raise insulin. The other half will raise glucagon. So the insulin to glucagon ratio stays exactly the same. So is it true that a chicken breast will raise insulin? Yes, it is. But it's also true that it'll raise glucagon. So it'll replace all the insulin brings the sugar down, but the glucagon causes your body to break down amino acids and fatty acids and all that stuff. So it's just, it's the ratios that matter. So you want the insulin and glucagon ratio to be the same, and that's what protein does. So people shouldn't fear protein. I feel like I just rambled for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. So basically what he's trying to say is just like protein has an impact on insulin, but it's not the same impact as sugar does. So you shouldn't fear it because of its impact on insulin.
Yeah.
And so like the recommendations about limiting protein are for sick individuals. Those are for people with epilepsy, cancer, kidney disease, those type of things, like chronic illness, life-threatening type of disease. They're not for the average person. And if you look at like the animal kingdom, most animals eat to like their protein threshold.
Yes.
They're trying to eat, consume enough protein. So telling somebody to limit their protein is probably going to make somebody hungry and irritable all day. So not the best recommendation.
Not the best, but yeah, exactly. And protein is so vital. Like, I mean, everybody, I think personally, everyone should lift weights. Obviously, I'm a little biased, but every muscle, having a little muscle on your frame is never a bad thing. It's extremely healthy. It's kind of a buffer between our blood. Our body can store glucose in our muscles. It's such a good thing to have extra muscle on our body. So we need to increase our protein intake to increase our muscle size. It's just a fact. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't think anyone should limit their protein unless, like Tom said, you're in a like a disease state. And the percentage of the people in those states is tiny.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking like fractions of a percent.
Yeah, we're talking sub 1%. Yeah.
And we shouldn't really be making recommendations for everybody off of 0.5% of the population.
Yes.
You know, like that doesn't make any sense. What about the other 99.5?
Yeah. You know? So don't limit your protein on keto. Just like I would eat instinctively. And if you end up in your macros for the day, say they're honestly 60-40, you're just a freak and you can eat a ton of meat like me, and you're 60% fat, 40% protein, and you feel fine, guess what? You're good. Do your thing. If you end up around the, say, 80-20 range, that's where you feel fine. You feel fine with 20% fat, 80% protein, then you're good. That's good for you too. Like, that's fine as well. But don't limit protein because you're scared of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, one thing we talk about in the Gluconeogenesis podcast is, like, so your body is going to use protein to convert it into glucose if you're on a ketogenic diet. Like, your body needs glucose. That's where it's mostly going to get it from, is protein. But your body isn't going to use all that protein just to turn into high blood sugar, or just to turn into sugar, so you can have high blood sugar. Like, and just therefore, like, poison yourself. Like, your body's not that stupid that it's going to do all this work to kill itself.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's just not going to do that.
Yeah, that argument, it kind of makes it seem that gluconeogenesis is supply-driven. So if you give your body a bunch of substrates that are capable of turning into glucose, which protein is, then your body will turn it into glucose. But that's not true. It is not supply-driven. It is demand-driven. So your body will take those amino acids as needed to support glucose, or blood glucose, but it's tiny. Like, there's only 4 grams of glucose in our entire blood supply. It's not a lot.
Yeah.
So it's like a little drip. It slowly but surely takes a little amino acids and fatty acids as well and converts it into glucose, but it's not supply driven, it's demand driven. And the demand is not that high.
Yeah, not a lot of people talk about that. I don't hear a lot of nuance when it comes to gluconeogenesis.
Yeah, I know.
One thing I do want to talk about before we wrap this up is the fat coffee. So there are times where I do think doing like a bulletproof coffee, or like, you know, just adding some fat to your coffee is a good idea. And that's if you're going to use that as a meal replacement. So like, hey, if you want to consume 500 calories with your coffee, but you're going to skip breakfast because of that, go for it. But if you can consume like an extra 500 calories of coffee
on top of breakfast.
Yeah. And with your breakfast, not a good idea. I mean, if you're trying to bulk, great idea.
Yeah.
I always consider like liquid calories the ideal way to consume like extra if you're trying to grow. If you're trying to lose, limit the amount of, like, liquid calories as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, that's actually, just to keep it simple, that's great. Just keeping it simple. If you want to gain weight, drinking calories is a good thing. If you want to lose weight, don't drink your calories.
I hate seeing all those, drink my shake, it'll help you lose weight. No, it won't.
Yeah, no,
it's designed to make you gain weight.
Yeah, that's a good point, because my wife has butter coffee every morning, and she does that as her breakfast. That's what she does.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't know if we talked about it in the podcast. So like, does that break your fast? Does it not? I mean, it depends on what you're fasting for, I guess.
Sure, and who gives a shit?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I mean, like, that fat will have slight impact on your insulin. Not a lot. Yeah, a little bit.
Out of the three macronutrients, fat has the most, or the least amount effect on insulin. It's almost zero, but it does affect it a little bit. And my wife's lean already. She's not trying to lose any more weight.
She's really active. She works out every day.
So it's not, those calories aren't a problem for her at all. It's honestly, she likes it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, cool, do your thing.
Yeah. If you're doing a fat coffee in the morning and now you're able to go an extra 5 hours without eating because of that, hey, that's good.
I mean, literally. So my wife, this is her routine. She has butter coffee in the morning and then she doesn't eat all day. And then she comes home and she eats just one big ass meal for dinner.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's perfect. You know, I said, yeah, that works for you. It's good. And it does. Like, the butter and the coffee gives her enough fuel throughout the day to do what she needs to do.
Yeah. So is that everything?
Yeah, I think so. Those are, I think, a lot of common mistakes what people do when they go keto. And hopefully people listen and can do it right.
Yeah, hopefully this comes as a benefit to you. Yeah, unfortunately, Keto is really popular at the moment, which is definitely a good thing. I'm glad more and more people are learning about keto. But with all that, like, excess information, there's a lot of, like, bad information out there. So a lot of people are learning how to do it wrong. And then if they do it wrong, then it's like, oh, hey, keto didn't work. Well, it's like, no, it's that you just didn't do it right.
You know, that's actually a kind of a sore topic for me, because there are studies out there with the huge title that keto diet does X, Y, and Z, and they're negative. And if you ever look at the studies, usually they're mouse studies, you know what they actually fed the mouse?
Like corn oil or some crap like that?
Yeah. They changed their feed to incorporate like 70% of their diet coming from soy oil. And I look what happened to the mouse. They got sick and fat. And I'm like, no shit, bro. Like, this isn't the keto diet that we would recommend.
Yeah.
No one should eat that shit.
Oh, so a 70% soy diet caused some, like, issues? Yeah, no shit.
No shit.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. But they use that. And again, it's like half-truths, and it's very misleading. And no one's ever going to look through the study and see what they actually fed the people or fed the mice. So, I don't know. It's just, it's upsetting, but that's how they do it. That's how they paint the keto in a negative way.
Yeah, and, like, keto and low-carb are used pretty interchangeably. So, like, if a study says, like, low-carb did bad, you have to look at, like,
what do they mean by low-carb?
Low-carb could mean 40%, because, like, the general recommendations are 55 to 60% carbs. So if you're under 55% carbs...
Technically,
to them, it's low-carb. I would consider low-carb to be... carbs are, like, your lowest macronutrient. Like, that's what low-carb means to me. High-fat... fat is like the most of my calories are coming from fat.
Yeah, at least over 50% the minimum. Yeah.
Moderate, that's the middle.
Yep.
Protein's moderate, carbs are low.
Yep.
That's what makes sense to me, but like science, I guess, doesn't see it that way.
Yeah,
exactly. They don't have logic when it comes to nutritional science.
They don't. They have an agenda though.
Yeah.
And they know how to paint their agenda in whatever light they want it to be. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. Hopefully you guys liked it. Hopefully you learned something. You can check us out at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, hopefully this podcast can provide some sort of benefit to you or to a friend, so please share it with a friend or family member, especially around the holidays, so I know everybody's, you know, gathering up, meeting up with everybody. You can find our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Please rate and review. And also, we have a donate button on our homepage. It's a bright yellow button. Just kind of scroll down towards the bottom. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.